Scottish Qualifications Authority, National Qualifications 2014. English for Speakers of Other Languages, Higher. Section A, Listening. Recording 1. Listen to the interview, answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 1, before you hear the recording.
Hello, and welcome to Local Witness. I'm Magnus Malone, and we'll be discussing recent local events until 10. Let's start with an unexpected chain of events that led to chaos in Wetherby last Friday. It was a normal busy Friday morning in the small market town when a cafe owner spotted a shifty-looking man on the street. He appeared to have a small plastic box in his hand, and after fiddling with the container, he bent down and hid it under a flower box on the pavement. He then hurried off, talking on his mobile. This was witnessed by Jane, whose cafe is right next to where the container was left. Jane is with us in the studio today. Can you tell us what happened?
Good morning. Yes, well, of course, my first thought was that it was an explosive device and I called the emergency services. The police came immediately and sealed off the whole area.
And an army bomb disposal unit was called in?
That's right. They moved the planter to expose the box and they sent in a robot to carry out a controlled explosion. We were closed down and it was a disaster for us, really. Because we had been very busy that morning and it was a beautiful day and we probably would have done a roaring trade.
So businesses were evacuated after police cordoned off the area?
Shops were closed for nearly 3 hours and business owners lost thousands of pounds.
And what did it turn out to be?
It wasn't a bomb. The suspicious device turned out to be a geocache. I'd never heard of geocaching before this.
If you're not familiar with geocaching, it's basically an internet-based treasure hunt. Here in the UK, it's grown in popularity over the last decade and thousands of people are involved. Geocachers leave a box containing a log sheet and some goodies at an outdoor location of their choice. Then put the GPS coordinates online and these are used by other geocachers to find it. It can take a bit of cunning to locate the box because the cache is nearly always well hidden and can be tiny. They use a device fitted with GPS, global positioning system. It's all part of the challenge. But it's also why the centre of Wetherby was brought to a standstill.
I can't believe how anyone could leave something that could be mistaken for a bomb in a busy street. I don't want to spoil people's fun, and if adults feel the urge to do treasure hunts, that's great. But when placing the caches, they should apply some basic common sense.
So you think caches shouldn't be left in urban areas?
Absolutely. They should get out into the country if they want to do that kind of thing. Away from people trying to run businesses.
This geocacher was arrested, but not charged. Do you think that's right? After all, he was only taking part in a game.
If we'd known what was going on, we wouldn't have been so concerned.
It's now recommended that geocachers who hide caches in urban areas let the police know where the containers are. But couldn't they just check the geocaching website?
Not many people know about geocaching. If he had at least informed nearby businesses, it would have saved a lot of trouble.
The upshot of all this is an estimated emergency services bill of £35,000. But I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us today, Jane. Hello, and welcome to Local Witness. I'm Magnus Malone, and we'll be discussing recent local events until 10. Let's start with an unexpected chain of events that led to chaos in Wetherby last Friday. It was a normal busy Friday morning in the small market town when a cafe owner spotted a shifty-looking man on the street. He appeared to have a small plastic box in his hand, and after fiddling with the container, he bent down and hid it under a flower box on the pavement. He then hurried off, talking on his mobile. This was witnessed by Jane, whose cafe is right next to where the container was left. Jane is with us in the studio today. Can you tell us what happened?
Good morning. Yes, well, of course, my first thought was that it was an explosive device and I called the emergency services. The police came immediately and sealed off the whole area.
And an army bomb disposal unit was called in.
That's right. They moved the planter to expose the box and they sent in a robot to carry out a controlled explosion. We were closed down and it was a disaster for us, really. Because we had been very busy that morning and it was a beautiful day and we probably would have done a roaring trade.
So businesses were evacuated after police cordoned off the area?
Shops were closed for nearly 3 hours and business owners lost thousands of pounds.
And what did it turn out to be?
It wasn't a bomb. The suspicious device turned out to be a geocache. I'd never heard of geocaching before this.
If you're not familiar with geocaching, it's basically an internet-based treasure hunt. Here in the UK, it's grown in popularity over the last decade and thousands of people are involved. Geocachers leave a box containing a log sheet and some goodies at an outdoor location of their choice. They then put the GPS coordinates online and these are used by other geocachers to find it. It can take a bit of cunning to locate the box because the cache is nearly always well hidden and can be tiny. They use a device fitted with GPS global positioning system. It's all part of the challenge. But it's also why the centre of Wetherby was brought to a standstill.
I can't believe how anyone could leave something that could be mistaken for a bomb in a busy street. I don't want to spoil people's fun, and if adults feel the urge to do treasure hunts, that's great. But when placing the caches, they should apply some basic common sense.
So you think caches shouldn't be left in urban areas?
Absolutely. They should get out into the country if they want to do that kind of thing. Away from people trying to run businesses.
This geocacher was arrested, but not charged. Do you think that's right? After all, he was only taking part in a game.
If we'd known what was going on, we wouldn't have been so concerned.
It's now recommended that geocachers who hide caches in urban areas let the police know where the containers are. But couldn't they just check the geocaching website?
Not many people know about geocaching. If he had at least informed nearby businesses, it would have saved a lot of trouble.
The upshot of all this is an estimated emergency services bill of £35,000. But I'm afraid we'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us today, Jane.
Recording 2. Listen to the talk. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 2, before you hear the recording.
The American Technology Corporation, IBM, produce an annual report called Next 5 in 5. It's based on 5 innovations that could change the way people work, live and play over the next 5 years. The forecast has had some misses in the past, such as the 2007 prediction that doctors would develop super senses to smell illness. But on the whole, the lists have been fairly true to life. In 2010, IBM predicted that by 2015, technology innovations will have changed our lives in 5 ways. Now we're in 2014. It's interesting to consider how likely these predictions are. The first innovation involves batteries. Ever wish you could make your laptop battery last all day without needing a charge? Wouldn't it be great if your mobile phone charged itself while being carried in your pocket? Well, by 2015... scientific advances in transistors and battery technology could allow this to happen. There's even the chance that your devices could breathe the air around them to power themselves. The battery should last about 10 times longer than in 2010. Or better still, batteries may disappear altogether in smaller devices. The second prediction is that computers will help energize our cities. Can you imagine if the energy used by the world's data centres could in turn be recycled for a city's use? Innovation in computers will enable the excess heat and energy that they give off to heat buildings in the winter and power air conditioning in the summer. The Swiss Federal Institute of Technology already has a supercomputer which uses water to keep its chips cool. The output heat, which is 65 degrees Celsius, gets pumped into the Institute building to provide warmth. Next, the Smarter Traveller Research Initiative. Wherever you live, traffic congestion is an issue, especially during rush hour. Today there are more than 1 billion cars on the road, and that number will double by 2020. This initiative will lead to customised, congestion-free travel routes for commuters. It also aims to help transportation agencies better understand and manage traffic. The aim is to create safer roads and less gridlock, and this should help to reduce carbon emissions. Researchers have developed a traffic prediction tool that analyses lots of possible scenarios, such as traffic accidents, commuter locations, and expected travel start times that can affect commuters on motorways, rail lines, and urban roads. The tool offers future traffic forecasts for up to 60 minutes in advance, giving transportation operators the ability to respond quickly to potential traffic problems. Prediction number 4. You'll be able to beam up to your friends. Science fiction is becoming a reality, as 3D interfaces let you interact with holograms of your friends. This technology will fit into your mobile phones, and for work, fun and chat, we'll be able to interact in entirely new ways. The final prediction is you won't need to be a scientist to save the planet. You will all be walking sensors. You'll collect data through sensors in your phone, car, wallet, and even your tweets. And that data will give scientists a real-time picture of your environment. You'll be able to volunteer this information to help fight global warming, save endangered species, or track invasive plants or animals that threaten ecosystems. A whole class of citizen scientists will emerge and create massive data sets for research. So, by observing simple things in your local area, such as when the first freeze occurs in your town or when the mosquitoes first appear, you, the citizen scientist, will play a vital role. The American Technology Corporation, IBM, produce an annual report called Next 5 in 5. It's based on 5 innovations that could change the way people work, live and play over the next 5 years. The forecast has had some misses in the past, such as the 2007 prediction that doctors would develop super senses to smell illness. But on the whole, the lists have been fairly true to life. In 2010, IBM predicted that by 2015, technology innovations will have changed our lives in 5 ways. Now we're in 2014. It's interesting to consider how likely these predictions are. The first innovation involves batteries. Ever wish you could make your laptop battery last all day without needing a charge? Wouldn't it be great if your mobile phone charged itself while being carried in your pocket? Well, by 2015, scientific advances in transistors and battery technology could allow this to happen. There's even the chance that your devices could breathe the air around them to power themselves. The battery should last about 10 times longer than in 2010. Or better still, batteries may disappear altogether in smaller devices. The second prediction is that computers will help energize our cities. Can you imagine if the energy used by the world's data centres could in turn be recycled for a city's use? Innovation in computers will enable the excess heat and energy that they give off to heat buildings in the winter and power air conditioning in the summer. The Swiss Federal Institute of Technology already has a supercomputer which uses water to keep its chips cool. The output heat, which is 65 degrees Celsius, gets pumped into the Institute building to provide warmth. Next, the Smarter Traveller Research Initiative. Wherever you live, traffic congestion is an issue, especially during rush hour. Today there are more than 1 billion cars on the road, and that number will double by 2020. This initiative will lead to customised, congestion-free travel routes for commuters. It also aims to help transportation agencies better understand and manage traffic. The aim is to create safer roads and less gridlock, and this should help to reduce carbon emissions. Researchers have developed a traffic prediction tool that analyses lots of possible scenarios, such as traffic accidents, commuter locations, and expected travel start times that can affect commuters on motorways, rail lines, and urban roads. The tool offers future traffic forecasts for up to 60 minutes in advance, giving transportation operators the ability to respond quickly to potential traffic problems. Prediction number 4. You'll be able to beam up to your friends. Science fiction is becoming a reality, as 3D interfaces let you interact with holograms of your friends. This technology will fit into your mobile phones, and for work, fun, and chat, we'll be able to interact in entirely new ways. The final prediction is you won't need to be a scientist to save the planet. You will all be walking sensors. You'll collect data through sensors in your phone, car, wallet, and even your tweets. And that data will give scientists a real-time picture of your environment. You'll be able to volunteer this information to help fight global warming, save endangered species, or track invasive plants or animals that threaten ecosystems. A whole class of citizen scientists will emerge and create massive data sets for research. So, by observing simple things in your local area, such as when the first freeze occurs in your town or when the mosquitoes first appear, you, the citizen scientist, will play a vital role.
Recording 3. Listen to the interview. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 3, before you hear the recording.
Good afternoon. Today's program is about identity theft, and with us is Sue Daniels, an identity theft educator. Sue, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How would you define identity theft?
It's basically a form of fraud. A criminal pretends to be someone else by taking on that person's identity. It can be to gain access to their finances or to obtain other benefits in that person's name. But there are many other scams emerging.
Who does it affect?
It touches everyone in this country and worldwide. A lot of it originates from outside the country, making it tough to stop and to hold criminals accountable.
So, what do the general public need to know about identity theft?
Victims often say that they didn't know this could happen to them. You wouldn't know if someone's hijacked your tax return or is committing crimes in your name. So, to me, the number one thing is more education on today's identity theft trends and the type of risks there are.
So it's not just credit cards or national insurance numbers?
No, it's more than that. Identity thieves are sophisticated. They sit on Facebook or Twitter and hack into large databases. They take small bits of information on your profile and put it together with other information that's public. They then use that information or sell it to others.
And I suppose you wouldn't even know it.
That's right. Your kids might be using your home computer to share music, leaving the files open for sharing, and anyone can get your information.
Okay. You have any tips for avoiding this?
Well, it's important to relabel confidential computer files. You could change a name like tax return to holiday plans, so that if you're hacked, your confidential documents will be safe. Anyway, why keep all your sensitive documents on your computer when you don't access them regularly?
put them on a flash drive and lock them up in a box.
On a related note, research shows that people tend to use the same passwords for all their accounts.
Yes, that's unfortunately true. They also tend to use something easy to guess. In a recent training session, I asked how many use the name of their pet or their birth date in their password. Over 75% raised their hands. Not a good idea.
And social networking settings aren't always secure either.
You might have so-called privacy settings, but the settings can be changed or hacked. People can use the information you put in your profile. For example, you love horse riding, and they pretend to have the same interest and ask you, hey, what school did you go to? And your guard is down. We're inclined to trust, and criminals know that, so they take advantage of that trust.
What do you suggest?
I always say, stop telling people where you are every minute of the day. People have been robbed because of this. If thieves know where you live and see a picture of you sitting miles away on a sunny beach, they'll soon work out you're not at home. There was recently a story in the news where the teenage daughter texted, "We're at the airport, we're getting on a plane." Her friend posted it on Facebook, and a friend of that friend robbed their house.
Oh dear.
So you shouldn't put too much information on your profile. We tend to hide behind computers thinking it's just our friends that can see the screens, and that's not the case.
And it's not just computers either, is it?
No. You should never give your information to anyone who asks for it by phone, and you shouldn't blindly trust anyone who calls in person either. Find out about the latest scams. There's information out there, and the best you can do is be informed. If you're ever in doubt, if you get an email that you think might be a scam, look it up in your browser. Chances are, people have already written about it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Good afternoon. Today's programme is about identity theft. And with us is Sue Daniels, an identity theft educator. Sue, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How would you define identity theft?
It's basically a form of fraud. A criminal pretends to be someone else by taking on that person's identity. It can be to gain access to their finances or to obtain other benefits in that person's name. But there are many other scams emerging.
Who does it affect?
It touches everyone in this country and worldwide. A lot of it originates from outside the country, making it tough to stop and to hold criminals accountable.
So, what do the general public need to know about identity theft?
Victims often say that they didn't know this could happen to them. You wouldn't know if someone's hijacked your tax return or is committing crimes in your name. So, to me, the number one thing is more education on today's identity theft trends and the type of risks there are.
So it's not just credit cards or national insurance numbers?
No. It's more than that. Identity thieves are sophisticated. They sit on Facebook or Twitter and hack into large databases. They take small bits of information on your profile and put it together with other information that's public. They then use that information or sell it to others.
And I suppose you wouldn't even know it.
That's right. Your kids might be using your home computer to share music, leaving the files open for sharing, and anyone can get your information.
Okay. You have any tips for avoiding this?
Well, it's important to relabel confidential computer files. You could change a name like tax return to holiday plans, so that if you're hacked, your confidential documents will be safe. Anyway, why keep all your sensitive documents on your computer when you don't access them regularly? Put them on a flash drive and lock them up in a box.
On a related note, research shows that people tend to use the same passwords for all their accounts.
Yes, that's unfortunately true. They also tend to use something easy to guess. In a recent training session, I asked how many use the name of their pet or their birth date in their password. Over 75% raised their hands. Not a good idea.
And social networking settings aren't always secure either.
You might have so-called privacy settings, but the settings can be changed or hacked. People can use the information you put in your profile. For example, you love horse riding, and they pretend to have the same interest and ask you, hey, what school did you go to? And your guard is down. We're inclined to trust, and criminals know that, so they take advantage of that trust.
What do you suggest?
I always say, stop telling people where you are every minute of the day. People have been robbed because of this. If thieves know where you live and see a picture of you sitting miles away on a sunny beach, they'll soon work out you're not at home. There was recently a story in the news where the teenage daughter texted, we're at the airport, we're getting on a plane. Her friend posted it on Facebook and a friend of that friend robbed their house.
Oh dear.
So you shouldn't put too much information on your profile. We tend to hide behind computers thinking it's just our friends that can see the screens, and that's not the case.
And it's not just computers either, is it?
No. You should never give your information to anyone who asks for it by phone, and you shouldn't blindly trust anyone who calls in person either. Find out about the latest scams. There's information out there, and the best you can do is be informed. If you're ever in doubt, if you get an email that you think might be a scam, look it up in your browser. Chances are, people have already written about it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers. This is the end of the listening test.